Today we concluded chapter 1. And Arjuna gave many sensible and fine reasons for his discouragement about fighting in the battle. He saw that there was going to be a complete destruction. The Kshatriya race practically was going to be annihilated, and the Kshatriya's position is to protect Dharma on behalf of the of religiosity, on behalf of the Brahmin. So practically speaking, culture would be destroyed. And culture has a specific purpose. It's not just to provide economic development and pleasures, but the culture has a purpose related to spiritual life. Of course, we know this, that culture is supposed to support the spiritual journey of the soul and ensure that he doesn't go backwards and misuse his human life. At least he should go forward. If he doesn't achieve the highest, he should at least go forward in spiritual life, evolve further. So Arjuna foresaw, and quite accurately, that the culture is going to be destroyed. And there would be family, the protectors of religion would all be destroyed, and the women folk would be left unprotected, and the result of that would be Vana Sankara. And he said, how ironic it is that here we are looking, participating in this battle to gain something, to gain pleasure, because what is always the motivation for action is to gain something that we think is for our benefit. So the irony that Arjuna saw was that instead of benefiting ourselves or the world by participating in this battle, the result is actually going to be the destruction of culture, and also I'm going to accumulate so many sinful reactions, so much pop, so much sin for my participation in the fact that I'm going to suffer. So rather than gaining pleasure, I'm just going to gain misery. So how ironic it is, and here I am on the verge of this battle, and it's better if I just die. Let the sons of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana and Dushasana and the other sons, let them kill me unarmed. It will be better for me. It will be better for the world. At least I won't be participating in this incredible catastrophe. Better that I die unarmed than participate. So the last verse, so when one's in that mood, that there's no benefit for my activities, how can there be an impetus to engage in that activity? To fight in a battle, one has to be so psyched up, one has to be, one's consciousness has to be fine-tuned, and one has to be sure of one's purposes. Otherwise, if one won't have the proper motivation, the body and mind will not be in alignment. So clearly, Arjuna's mind was not in alignment at all with what he was going to have to do. His mind was telling him, and his intelligence, his mind based on his intelligence, was to tell him, don't fight. And yet, his body was there, ready to engage in the warfare. And there Krishna was, having driven Arjuna's chariot in between the two armies, so he could see, and he saw, I'm going to have to kill my relatives, etc. So the last verse in the first chapter said that his mind became overwhelmed with grief, and after thinking and speaking in this way, he put aside his bow and arrows, and he just couldn't consider, practically speaking, fighting. And just imagine the scene. Just imagine the scene. The atmosphere was electrified with the passion of the impending battle, and everyone had already blown their conch shells, and everyone was ready for it to begin. And there was Arjuna in the middle of it all, sitting on his chariot, Krishna driving the chariot, completely dejected. This put down his bow, and it was just about to begin. He was really out of harmony with what was going on. So, Sanjay, who is narrating this to whom? Dhritarashtra. Seeing, he's speaking here in the beginning of the second chapter, seeing Arjuna full of compassion even for himself, because he thought that I'm going to engage in sinful activities and I'm going to have to suffer so much. So he was compassionate to the people who would kill, he was compassionate to the innocent people who would suffer due to the destruction of the dynasties and culture. He was full of compassion, including for himself. His mind, depressed. What does depressed mean? Sad, yeah. What were you saying?
To push down.
Yes, yes. So what's the one we're talking about, depression? The consciousness depressed, what does it mean? What's pushed down?
The emotions are down.
What does that mean? But sometimes emotions are heightened. But which emotions? The down emotions, the miserable emotions are heightened. Mm-hmm. Just one feels so sad, but not only sad, but there's some other emotions in there, like hopelessness. Because if you feel sad and you feel, oh, tomorrow I'll feel better, then you won't be depressed, you'll just be sad. But when he was depressed, he thought the future looks worse than the present. What is the hope here? So Arjuna, seeing Arjuna full of compassion, and his depression, his misery, his dejection, was due to his compassion. His mind depressed. His eyes, it was striking him so deeply in the core of his heart, that his eyes were full of tears, ashu pano kulek chanam. That he was a warrior. He was not some simple sentimentalist. He had to kill. He was practiced in killing the Kshatriyas so that they would not feel compassion on the battlefield and feel like if any of us had to operate, if someone had some problem in his arm and we had to take a knife and cut it open. Practically speaking, none of us could do it. To take a knife to someone's body, even if we knew it was going to help them, we couldn't do it because our consciousness is not right. But the Kshatriyas had to kill, and just to practice a callousness, so to speak, they would kill animals. Because you need a callousness on the battlefield. If you thought, oh, he's going to bleed a lot, it's really going to hurt him a lot. By the time you're thinking like that, someone's already shot you. So this type of a warrior whose heart was strong, he was crying. His eyes were full of tears. And seeing him like this, Madhusudan spoke the following words. So who is Madhusudan? It's Krishna. Now what is Krishna going to tell him? Of course, we know, we've all read the Bhagavad Gita and we've studied, but what is Krishna going to tell him, and what's his purpose? So the first thing Krishna says, see Bhagavan Uvacha. So here Krishna is noted to be Bhagavan, the possessor of all opulence, the supremely fortunate one. What an interesting concept of God, the Parameshwara, the Supreme Lord, the one who is full of the greatest fortune. Very different from God or Ishwara, the controller, or sometimes he's called the one with no name. That's what they cannot name him, they cannot speak his name even. What a difference between that concept of God, of the supreme absolute truth, and that's how he's Param Satyam, that's how he's denoted in the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Param Satyam, and the Bhagavatam is Param Satyam Dhimayi. It's a meditation on the Absolute Truth, the all-inclusive Absolute Truth. He who possesses all fortune, he is going to speak. And what is he going to say? The one who is all fortunate is going to speak to the one who feels himself the most unfortunate. And what is he going to say? Is he going to pat him on the head and say, "It's all right. Don't worry about everything. I'm here." No, he says, "Kutas tva kajmalam midam." Kajmalam, kaj means dirtiness or impurities. Kuta, where have these impurities come from? In this hour, how are you lamenting? This lamentation that you're having is just arising from the dirtiness, contamination in your heart. And anartha drishtam aswagyam akirti karam arjuna. And these impurities, anarya drishtam, they are not befitting. The way that you're talking is not befitting Arya, or one who knows, who is advanced in life. They are meant for anarya, those who have lesser consciousness, and they do not, akirti, they don't lead to fame. Akirti karam, they are cause of, kirti is fame, akirti karam, they are the cause of infamy. Oh Arjuna, your thoughts. So immediately the first thing he does, and there he is, the poor fellow, there he is depressed, having to kill his family members. And Krishna chastises him. What do you think about that? Huh?
It's surprising.
You think he should change his counseling style? What do you think? Or do you think he knows what he's doing? And he knows who he's dealing with too. After all, he is Bhagawan, the all-knowing. I guess that's one of his characteristics, that he knows just what he's doing, and also he's in everyone's heart. And Arjuna was strong, and now he's asking, how have these weaknesses come over you? Now what is he going to tell him? He's told him, I'll read the verse, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you?" And just consider what Arjuna, those impurities were. He's compassionate. But there was a fault in his consciousness. And what Krishna is going to do is not exactly give him philosophy. Because when we usually think of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what is the first philosophical point that Krishna is going to tell Arjuna? Yeah, you're not the body, you're a soul, you're eternal, there's no death. But he's not actually teaching him philosophy. He's changing his viewpoint. He's changing his mental conception of what reality is. And it's more than just philosophy, because we've all learned how to know the philosophy without changing our mind. But Krishna is really interested in changing the full viewpoint of Arjuna. And that viewpoint is based on changing his philosophical understanding of what's going on. Because we look at the world, we see what's going on, but we don't really see what's going on. What do we see? We see our own consciousness reflected in the world. We don't see exactly with our eyes, we see with our minds, with our consciousness. And therefore, if you ask 15 people after an accident what happened, you'll get probably 20 or 30 different viewpoints of what happened, because people's minds change also. And actually, one of the Lakshmi Mataji told me that she once did in her class, she wanted to make this point to her students. She had a bunch of, maybe there were, I think, 16 teenage girls that were her students, and she was making a point, and she had staged something to happen. So one member of the community in Alachua, devotee community in Alachua, came in with his son, and just they were outside on the veranda or something, and then they started arguing with each other, but it was actually an act. It was something that she had staged, but the girls didn't know this, and then the argument became very heated, and they became very angry at each other, and it was all an act. And then the father became so angry at the boy, he threw him off the veranda. And she had arranged it that she wasn't there in the room. She went out for a couple of minutes, and then this happened. And then she came in and said, "What happened?" And they went around the room. And out of the 16 different persons over there, there were 14 different explanations of what happened. And she said they couldn't even agree on what color shirt the fellow was wearing. Because we don't see with our eyes. We don't see reality. We see just a small fragment of reality based on our own mind. Atmavan manyate jagat. We see, not reality. And we see a part of reality because our consciousness is, of course, we're tiny, insignificant souls, so we can say that it is only Krishna who actually grasps reality in fact, because he is Savagya, he knows everything. So Arjuna, lamentation is born of which mode of material nature, by the way? Ignorance. So this is what happens. That when our consciousness is in the mode of ignorance, we get ignorant type of feelings, and we see the world through that. So we become, we lament, we're depressed, we're miserable. When our consciousness is, and we're thinking about the past a lot, even though Arjuna here is thinking about the future, usually it's the mode of passion that makes our mind run always into the future, and I have to do this, and I have to do this, I have to do that. And it's the mode of goodness that places our mind where? In the present. And that the whole thing, that there's a whole popular cultural phenomena about the now, living in the now. Yes, you know that one? Yeah, everyone said live in the now. But there's a problem with trying to live in the present. The problem is you have to be in the mode of goodness to do it. That people want to live in the now, but they don't want to give up their habits born of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, because the mode of passion brings us, the mind is always in the future, and the mode of ignorance puts us, our minds always in the past, and lamentation, oh, this happened, and oh, this happened, and oh, and passion, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to get this, and I'm going to really enjoy it, I'm going to... And the result of those of different varieties of misery, actually. And it's goodness, which is the balance mode of material nature, which keeps us aware of who we are at the moment we are. That's the mode of goodness. We're conscious of. So the modes of nature are explained in the 14th, 17th, 18th chapters of Bhagavad Gita. But it's very, very, very important explanation. So we see that nowadays is that no one is where they are. If you just look at people's faces while they're walking down the street, everyone is somewhere else. In the future, in the past, or on their mobile phones, or downloading their emails. But you can see that people really want to keep away from where they are. And almost no one is where they are, which sounds funny. Because where we are isn't where our body is, it's where our consciousness is. So there's a disharmony between our consciousness and our bodies. What to speak of our consciousness and what's good for us often. Always somewhere else, dreaming. The mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. So what Krishna wants from Arjuna now, what he's going to do is not only change, give him philosophy, but he wants to change the level on which he is thinking, his consciousness is operating on. Because when we change the level on which our consciousness is operating on, then our whole vision of reality changes. Just like when, if like an ant, if we were walking on this carpet and we're just making our way through all the different strands of the carpet, we'd think of reality in one way. And right now, looking at the ant, we see the ant in his struggles, we'd see it in a different way. And if we were up in an aeroplane above the clouds, just looking at the people just on the roads, you know, in their cars, just pushing their way somehow on the highways, reality looks different from the point of view of the demigods. Reality looks different from the point of view of a sage. Reality looks different because there's all different consciousness. From the point of view of a baby, reality looks different from the point of view of a tiger. When a tiger looks at a human being, he sees one thing. A fly sees something completely different through his compound eye, but his consciousness is like that. So human life is a particular consciousness, is afforded a consciousness, and it has a capacity that is vast. So Krishna wants to change Arjuna's consciousness, and in that consciousness he will view what is going to happen on the battlefield almost inconceivably, as it seems from Arjuna's point of view, or even our point of view looking at it. It's going to change his viewpoint completely. And the key in changing his consciousness, his mentality, his viewpoint, is some philosophical points. So he says, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? How is your consciousness lowered so much? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the values of life. Anarya, your consciousness is lower, and therefore you're conceiving what is good, what is bad, what is important, what is not important, what is desirable, what is undesirable. You're perceiving it in a way that's going to not lead you higher, but it's going to lead you to infamy." So he's playing a little bit on his, because Arjuna is not in pure spiritual consciousness now by Krishna's arrangement. So he's playing or leading to his kshatriya-ness. Narya jishtam. He continues, this is slap number 2. Kaibhyam ma sma gama parta naitan twa upapadyate chudram. This is low class and petty riddhyam dolabam. It is coming from weakness of the heart. Kaibhyam means impotence. He's calling him impotent, low class. He's talking to a warrior here. He's insulting him. Chudram, petty. Vidya dolava, you're weak in your heart. And then he says, Chakfotishta Parantapa, O Parantapa, O conqueror of the enemies, get up. Get up. Because he had his mind had affected him so much, he put down his bow. And he was sitting on the chariot. So, Taktitishta Parantapa, get up. O son of Prita, do not yield to this degrading importance. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. He calls him, O son of Prita, you are a member of the royal dynasty. Just see how you are overcome by things not suitable for a person who has exalted consciousness. So what is he going to tell him? So far he's just basically insulted him, which the teacher is allowed to do. In fact, he must do it. And why must he do it? Because usually we impertinent students have a very inflated concept of who we are, overinflated, because we're tiny souls, we're insignificant. So the bubble of the balloon of our false ego must be popped for us to understand something of truth, of significance. So therefore there's chastisement, there's a minimization, because what false ego does is make us, it inflates us, it gives us a sense of being great, of wonderful, of being central in the universe. But false ego is false, because we are not great. We are not central in the universe, but due to false ego, we feel that we are. And what I think, just like on the internet nowadays, they have these, everywhere they have these forums where someone will, I've seen it about cameras and things like that. Someone says something, whatever, you have these forums where everyone gives their opinion, it always ends up with fighting and insulting each other. Even over cameras, it's wild. What to speak of politics and religion? You know, they start fighting over which camera lens is good, and they call each other names, and then politics starts with one group taking one side. It's amazing, over things that are completely insignificant, because everyone is allowed to give their opinion and no one's an authority, and everyone, because one's concepts are born of one's false ego, one's limited consciousness, everyone thinks, well, I think this, and I'm right. And the other one says, well, I think this, and I think that you're a fool. And if you're right, why aren't I right? And I'm right then about you being a fool. So Arjuna has just been told that it's weak. You should just fight. Now here's his response. He doesn't just say, yes, Krishna, yes, Prabhu. Rather, he says, O killer of enemies, Katam, Bhishma, Maham Sankhye, Dronam Cha Madhusudana, Isubi Patayoshyami, Pujahav Arisudana. You are Madhusudan. Madhusudan means the killer of Madhu. Madhu Kaitava were two demons. So you are Madhusudan, you are Arisudan. Ari means what?
Original.
Huh?
Original.
No, this is not Adi. Ari, enemy. So you are Arisudana. You are the killer of enemies, Madhusudan. But look who you're asking me to kill. Dronam, Bhishmam. They're not my enemies, but rather Pujarha. They are worthy of worship. O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona, who are worthy of my worship? So he's putting forward his argument strongly now. I should offer them flowers, Srila Vishnath Chakravarti says, not arrows. I should do puja to them. These personalities are so venerable. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Powerful argument. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. How could we enjoy? How could we have the kingdom? Even if we win. The kingdom, every time I see the kingdom, every time I see the throne, every time I see the royal courtyard, I will think of the cost in blood of these superiors. And that will plague my consciousness. Another reason he gives, very formidable. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. After all, the kingdom is going on. Duryodhana is a ruler. There is no crime. He's a strong ruler. The kingdom is safe. There is prosperity reigning. So there'll be at the cost of killing millions of people, there won't be any change benefit for the people. So we don't know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. It is quite a dilemma. So Arjuna has put forward strong reasons, but he understands that here I am on the battlefield and I'm a warrior. And I have to fight, but I can't fight. But I have to, but I can't. Life sometimes feels like that, doesn't it? You know, we're stuck in the middle of what's called divided mind. We get stuck with a divided mind. I have to do this. I can't do it. I have to do it. I can't do it. And this is one of the main symptoms of Kali Yuga people, divided minds. And even when we do something, we only half do it because half of our minds are going in the opposite direction. So whether we go left or right, we suffer. Because if we go left, the mind says, why didn't you go right? And if we go right, the mind says, why didn't you go left? You know what I mean? And this is essential suffering for Kali Yuga resonance. So what is Arjuna going to do? Because what he has said, because whichever way he turns, if I fight, I lose, and if I don't fight, I lose. So what to do? Either way is a defeat. So what does Arjuna do? The next verse tells the great wisdom and piety of Arjuna. He says, Kapanya do shupata swamhava prichami tam dhamasamuddha cheta yatraya syan nishitam buhatam me shishyasteham sarimam tam papana. Now I'm confused about my duty. I don't know whether to go left or right or up or down, to fight, to not fight. I'm confused of my duty, and the issue is so great, I have lost all my composure because of miserly weakness. I cannot run, I cannot fight. I'm confused about my duty, and I have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. So Arjuna's strength here is that he doesn't take his own point of view fully seriously, because he realizes, as Krishna has already pointed out to him, that my viewpoint is limited. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I'm your disciple, Shishyasteham, and a soul surrendered to you. Please instruct me. So actually speaking, Arjuna didn't hear any instructive words. He just heard criticism from Krishna until this point, until he surrendered. So Prabhupada's purport here, all the purports are actually so wonderful, but for me to move forward at some pace, we're not reading them, but here we'll read some. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone, and there's nothing we can do about it. It's the very nature, the incompatible nature of the soul, the eternal soul, in a material body, in a material world. And not only that, but there's also other people here. That which makes everything confusing, more confusing, because it's not just us in a body in a material world. It's like there's more than 6.5 billion humans who are all covered by false ego, and then there's the mosquitoes who think that the purpose of their life is to bite you, and then there's the what else is there? Kangaroos, and there's other things too, fish, and they're all thinking based in their own limited way, thinking that what I see is reality, what I perceive is real. The fly thinks like that. The lion thinks like that. The horse, for that matter, see, thinks in that way. And the humans, everyone is thinking in that way. In this condition, I'm asking you, this confusion, he's conscious enough to be confused. In this condition, I'm asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I'm your disciple and a soul surrendered to you. Please instruct me. By nature's own way, the complete system of material activities is a source of perplexity for everyone. It's not just me, it's not just you, it's everyone. In every step there is perplexity. And we, in our naivete, our childishness, we try to remove the perplexity, thinking that if we can just do this and make that adjustment, then I'll be simply happy. And the result is that we become more and more frustrated because it's just not the way reality in the material world is constructed. And it's very hard to accept this, and therefore Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Thakura has said, if one accepts that there is no situation in the material world within one which one can be happy, then one has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. Just that one simple, in one sense, obvious point. Easy to understand, hard to be convinced of in our practical dealings, in fact. In every step there is perplexity, and therefore it behooves one, what does behooves means? Behooves one to approach a bona fide spiritual master who can give one proper guidance for executing the purpose of life. It is in one's own interest to approach someone who has the spiritual knowledge that Krishna is teaching Arjuna, will teach Arjuna. So Prabhupada is making this point because it is the obvious point to make when Arjuna has done that very thing. He continues. All Vedic literatures advise us to approach a bona fide spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life. What does perplexities mean? Difficulties, more words, confusions, complexities, dualities, what else? It's so complex, huh?
Exasperation.
To get free from the perplexities of life which happen without our desire. We desire one thing and the exact opposite happens. So look what's being hinted at here, that if one approaches a spiritual master and surrenders to him and takes the instructions and applies them to one's life and changes one's way of thinking and acting, then one will not be troubled by the material existence, which by definition is perplexed, which means all the things that you said, confusing, miserable. That means that one will be able to live his life in this world, but not really participate in the human struggles that everyone else is participating. It's quite a big promise. To get one approaches a spiritual master to get free from the perplexities of life, which happen without our desire. They are like a forest fire that somehow blazes without being set by anyone. Similarly, the world situation is such that the perplexities of life automatically appear without our wanting such confusion. So Prabhupada is equating perplexities with confusion, not knowing really what to do. And ultimately, that's what happens. I mean, the easiest or the most obvious point is at the time of death, or at the time of death of a beloved one. It's a forest fire, and there's nothing one can do about it. No one wants the confusion of, here I am wanting to live, but my body is dying. Here I am wanting my dear mother who gave me life, my dear father who cared for me. I want them to live. And they can't. They're not. They're dying. They're suffering. How heavy are the perplexities of this world? The complexities. And therefore, they're compared to a forest fire. They burn. There is no compassion in a forest fire. If one is caught in the forest fire, no one could say, please, my dear fire, could you please not trouble me? Or you could trouble me, but not leave this poor rabbit alone. The fire doesn't care. It burns. It burns everyone. No one wants fire, and yet it takes place, and we become perplexed. It's the very nature of the world. The Vedic wisdom therefore advises that in order to solve the perplexities of life and to understand the science of the solution, one must approach a spiritual master who is in the disciplic succession. A person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. Okay, what's pi to the 50th place? Pi means, well, we don't do that anymore. We just take out our computers. 3.14, what is it? Yeah, pie, not apple pie or pizza pie, but pie is, what is this, the ratio between the circumference of the circle and the what's that thing called, not the diameter, the radius. When was the last time you used that in your practical daily life?
Going on.
Huh?
1981.
1981 was a long time ago. It was a good year, though. 1981. You were, when you were in this eighth grade, probably. This is the purport of the verse. One should not therefore remain in material perplexities, but should approach a spiritual master. This is the purport of the verse. So a person with a bona fide spiritual master is supposed to know everything. This doesn't mean that he has everything in the, I mean, everything. How many windows are there in the Empire State Building? How many treads on a tire? How many ants in Whiteman Park? There's a lot, by the way. How many, you remember that time the man who wanted to kill all the termites? He came in. How many termites did he say were in a nest? Do you remember? In one nest? But it was hundreds and hundreds of thousands at least, or maybe millions. Yeah. So, I mean, oh, that's, anyway, we're on a different topic here. But when the everything doesn't mean everything like that, but it means everything that is essential to get out of the perplexities of material life. So Arjuna, he surrenders and he continues speaking. I could find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. So it is so deep, his confusion is so deep. I will not be able to dispel it even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. Now, so Arjuna is basically finished. And he says, having spoken thus, Sanjaya is speaking, Arjuna, the chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight. And he fell silent. At that time, this is text 10, Tam Uvacha Rishikesha, Rishikesh, Krishna, the master of all the senses, Rishika Isha, the master of the senses, Prahasan Eva Bharata, he was not miserable like Arjuna, but rather he was more or less smiling. Senayor Ubior Madhe, in the midst of the armies, Vishidantam Idam Vacha, he spoke the following words into Arjuna, who was lamenting. Here's the translation. O descendant of Bharat, at that time, smiling in the midst of both the armies, Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. So the first thing he says, he's going to continue with his chastisement. Asochan, and again, Bhagavan is speaking. Krishna and Bhagavan are the same, the Supreme Lord. He says, Asochan anvasochas tom pragyavarams chabachase gatasun agatasunstha nanu sochanti pandava panditaha. So asochan anvasochas tom, you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. Pragyavarams chabachase, although you are speaking as if you knew reality and you were learned, your words show that you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. Gatasan agatasanstha nanu sochanti pandita. Because you are lamenting, because the wise, the pandita, they lament neither for the living nor the dead. Cutting. He hasn't spoken the philosophy in a clear and transparent way, but he's cutting in saying your basic premises, your viewpoint, your mindset is the mindset of a person who has no knowledge, who doesn't see things accurately, because your viewpoint is only considering bodies. It's only on the bodily platform. How earth-shattering this is actually to one's viewpoint of what life is and what's life-shattering to what one's life is and what's good and bad and what's the purpose of life. Because this is how we consider things, continuously, practically only. And it's based on illusion. It's based on that which is not accurate. Those who are wise, but look at his arguments. Look at what Arjuna was was fearing and not wanting to do. He wasn't wanting to kill his family members. I mean, who would be on the side of him killing his family members? None of us. Who would say, yes, Arjuna, you should kill your family members? Who would say, you should destroy the culture? Who would say that you're that none of your doubts are relevant, because they were so powerful to the point? But here Krishna is saying that they're the words of a person in illusion. And Krishna's viewpoint is the viewpoint of reality. We may think this, and we may think that, but it's not exactly important what we think. It's important what Krishna thinks. Very heavy point. Why? Again, because Krishna's viewpoint is reality. If we see something, we could be sure it's not complete. It's only a viewpoint. A view from a particular point, and the particular point is my consciousness, and that's not reality, because we only are viewing from one point, and Krishna views from every point. He's Sarvajna, he's Trikalajna, he knows everything, he sees everything, he's everywhere. So his viewpoint, even if every single person said it's like this, and Krishna said no, it's like that, Krishna's viewpoint is the one we wish to follow, because he is the absolute truth. Very heavy points, actually, because they are easy to accept intellectually. I mean, not easy, but we're sitting here because we want to accept them intellectually. But very difficult to accept in the core of our heart, and to act on it and to trust it, because of the very nature of being a conditioned soul and the very potency of Maya. It's very powerful. And there's one cure that Krishna will explain later in the 7th chapter. Maya me tantaranti te, surrender to Krishna. That, okay, Krishna, like Arjuna is doing, I'm yours. You tell me what to do. I'm surrendered. I'm yours. I'm yours. I'm yours. And the perfection of Krishna consciousness is to be thinking like that, not out of fear, not out of just duty, or not out of philosophical conviction, but it's out of pure love for Krishna. I am yours, I am yours, I am yours, and you are mine. And that's the glory of saying, I am yours, is it gives one the consciousness that you are mine. One considers oneself part of Krishna's entourage, so to speak, part of his group. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this at Bhakti Sandarbha. When we take to the surrendering process, Gotripte Varanam Tata, that causes, that which means I am yours, Krishna, it causes our consciousness to also think that I'm under Krishna's protection. He is my protector. If we don't have the consciousness, I am yours, Krishna, then we won't have the consciousness that Krishna is my protector. And therefore, if we don't have Krishna protecting us, who will we have protecting us? That was a question. Who will we have protecting us if we don't have, again, what's the answer? Well, who will protect you?
No one.
No one? Not even yourself? Will you protect yourself if someone attacks you? Will you protect yourself? I'm not talking philosophically.
You can't get
killed. No, when you're talking philosophically, I'm talking practically. Well, all we have is ourselves to protect us, right? Basically. and those that are connected to us, we hope will rise to our rescue when we're in need, friends and family, etc. If we don't have Krishna, we have to rely on what is called in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Atma Sanyas Satsvapi, the fallible soldiers, very limited. Like I've seen that we like to keep healthy, you know, but no one is actually healthy. It's not possible for us to be healthy. If some little some bugs come along, we may be healthy, we may eat the right foods, we might do our aerobic dancing or whatever we do, but if some little bug comes along, boom, we're completely knocked out regardless of our health. Because our fitness of body cannot protect us, nor can our material protect us, but that's all we have, in other words. So it's in our interest to have depth enough of realization to understand who Krishna is and to place ourselves under his protection, because the alternative again is that all we have to protect us is ourselves, basically. And that's really not very... I mean, who has survived over the last 10,000 years based on their own protection? Where is the list of the survivors, the successes? Who has been successful? Sometimes we think, how come there's bad people in this world that seem more successful than the good people? But who in this world is successful? In the last 500 years, who has been successful? Where are they now? So in the next verse, Krishna begins especially speaking about, he said it in this verse, those who are wise lament neither for the living or the dead. But in the next verse, in text 12, Krishna's going to speak about the eternality of the soul, and that will continue for quite a few verses. And Arjuna is ready to hear from Krishna. He's surrendered. He's ready to accept Krishna's words as authoritative, as truth. And he's ready to accept his own need for Krishna, for hearing the truth spoken by Krishna. So Krishna may speak the truth, but we may not feel we have a need. Just like someone may serve us a big feast of wonderful food, but if we don't have a hunger, it won't help. We won't eat it. We won't want to eat it. So it needs to be a hunger, too. Hunger means translated into a need, a feeling of necessity. So then, if we have the necessity, which is, we can say, is the minus pole of the magnet, and Krishna has the positive, and there's such an attraction between the two. He has the knowledge, the conclusion, he has reality in his hand, and we have the need. Okay, we'll stop here. Well, we should end here. But we'll just have 5 minutes of questions if there's any questions. If there are any questions. Again, what Krishna's trying to do is change the way that Arjuna is perceiving reality. And then the fighting, well, which is Krishna's desire, will come automatically. That's fighting in the consciousness of service. Not that we want, that's not that it's everyone's service, obviously, to fight. But to serve with devotion is everyone's service. That's the dharma of every soul. Sanatana dharma. Bhagavat dharma. To act in such a way that Krishna is pleased. Okay, then we'll end. And then tomorrow there's your house, yeah, this class? Is there a program in your house?
Tomorrow?
Yeah, Thursday?
No.
Okay. Anyway, Friday, I think there'll be some Krishna pastimes here. And on Saturday, Kirtan. And then we'll continue with Bhagavad Gita Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week. No, Monday is Ashwini Chaturdasi. So we'll have something else with the temple. Okay. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Sri Krishna Arjuna ki jai.